Welcome to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead here again to have another conversation with you about some of the stories that matter. Folks, as you know, with our new setup starting here at 2 p.m., we have on Wednesdays, we have our parenting roundtable. And so I'm excited today to talk more about parenting during the age of COVID. We are now trying to get into what we have to do to get our children ready to go back to school in an age and an environment during a time when we are dealing with COVID-19. I'm going to be joined shortly by two parents to talk a bit about some of their trepidation, some of their concern, the ways in which they are preparing their children. And then at 2:30, I'm going to speak to a pediatric specialist who's going to talk about how they are preparing the vaccine, how they're preparing our children and parents, what they're doing in terms of the ICUs, and why so many young people now under the age of 11 are being intubated because they have COVID-19. And then at 3 p.m., we'll have open phone lines as usual and as always to get you to chime in on this issue and other issues that might be of interest to you. I want to start by introducing my first guest, Derek Chase. He is a father of two. Right, Derek? How are you?
Yes, I am a father of two. Dr. K, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well. So now let's first find out, do you have a boy and a girl? Do you have two boys, two girls? What are the ages of your young people?
I'm blessed to have two boys, one about to turn 11 and one about to turn 14.
One is about to turn 11. One is about to turn 14.
Both in October.
And Jess, you don't have to say the name of the schools, but are your sons in public or private schools?
Both of my sons are in private school.
Okay, so it's been a different situation in terms of preparation, in terms of COVID. And so we will talk with you more about that. And then a very good friend of mine who I call D. Cook. How are you?
Hello, Dr. K. Happy Wednesday. How are you?
Happy Wednesday. And folks, just as a way of just being totally transparent, I need to have let people know that her son, James, is my itty-bitty reporter. And so you have three children. What are the ages of your children?
I have James, who's 12, and twins, that's 10. So 7th and 5th grade.
Are your children in public or private school?
They are actually in the public school. Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's good. So let's start there. So I'm going to come back with you. So, Derek.
Yes, ma'am.
What are your thoughts about children wearing masks?
I think that it's probably the most responsible thing that we can do. It's the one thing that I think that we have to agree upon, and not necessarily because we believe in wearing a mask or not, but there is a level of discomfort that comes when those of us who decide not to mask up are in the company of those who, you know, feel very anxious when someone is not masked up. So it's just the most responsible we can do, not necessarily for ourselves, is to just to support our neighbors by just being responsible for the environment that we're both putting ourselves in.
And Diema, are you able to keep all of your three children, all who are under the age of 14, are they having any difficulties with staying masked up? How do they feel about the fact that going back to school, they're going to have to wear a mask? Well, what's the conversation like in your household?
Well, we don't have difficulty with them masking up. The difficulty is them keeping it properly on. You know, sometimes, you know, it gets too hot, they put it below their nose or put it below their chin. So there are a lot of reminders of the mask.
Were your children home in the spring? Were they still online, or did they go back to school at all in the building?
No, I actually kept them home throughout the entire year because when the governor was able to open up the schools in March, it was too much of a transition for my family.
Okay.
So, you know, for me, I just felt the safest thing for the children was just to stay home. And, you know, also my two boys have underlying conditions like asthma, allergies, and things like that. So I wasn't sure how safe it would be for them to even go back just yet.
Are you planning to send them back this fall?
Well, yeah, for now. So we're having a conversation on, you know, what they should do and, you know, how they need to stay safe. Thankfully, I was able to get James, the 12-year-old, vaccinated. But okay. My twins, they are not vaccinated. So
you have one vaccinated, two unvaxxed, because they cannot, because they're too young. How about you, Derek? You have an 11 and a 14-year-old. Is your 14-year-old vaccinated, or are you making the decision not to vaccinate your children?
Well, to be honest, we have not made a decision to vaccinate or unvaccinate, or to remain unvaccinated. But my son, the most important driver is, how does he feel about it?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he wants to get vaccinated. He wants to be vaccinated.
Okay.
So, you know, we're just being medically responsible. We're not anti-vaccine folks. So I know that in the history of the world, you know, vaccinations have played a very important role in terms of stabilizing the world and making sure that we can enjoy some of the things that we enjoy. So we have to take that into consideration. And then the other thing is, it is a very new vaccination. We have a friend that my son plays soccer with, who is a young person, 15 years old, and was vaccinated, and he began to experience severe heart palpitations, which, of course, raised our anxiety. He's right now in the process of going through, you know, several assessments by doctors just to be assured that he can continue to play soccer. So we have some concerns.
Okay, so now with that, and I think that we're now getting into the heart of how we can deal with this and what does it mean for us as parents. I will say, just in, you know, in terms of transparency, as you both know, I have an 18-year-old and a 20-year-old. And so knowing that they were able to get vaccinated, but leaving the decision up to them. I think when they get to be 18 and 20, they have body autonomy, right? So you ask, if you want to get vaccinated, what's your plan if you don't? On my level, when it comes to university, D, is that we cannot even send them back to the university if they're not vaccinated. Both of my son's schools, one is down south and one is up north, you cannot come back to the campus. They're giving you 1 month. If you don't get vaccinated, then you have to leave. And that includes faculty and administrators and staff. Like, they're not playing. They're locking the campus down where they want everyone to be vaccinated. So when you think about that, Diema, do you think that maybe the school system should look for children between the ages of 12 and 17, since they are able to get vaccinated, should the schools look to mandate vaccinations to protect not just the students, but people in the household who cannot get vaccinated?
That's really hard to say right now, because I'm looking at it through both lenses. So that's really hard to say, you know, especially when you have children in the public sector, because, you know, parents have a lot of rights, and parents, you know, they can say yes to some things, they can say no to some things. So, yeah, that's really hard to say right now, since the vaccine is very new. I think, you know, they're kind of treating it like, you know, religious freedom.
Right.
If you could kind of compare that, you know. So, yeah, I don't really have a view on that one just yet.
Well, you do have freedoms, Derek. But we know that in order to go in schools, even to independent schools, and I'm at least aware of one of the independent schools that one of your sons go to, because both my sons went to that same independent school.
Right.
And they were not playing when it came to turning in your card, your vaccination card. Like, it was not like, well, I have choices, I don't want to do it. It was, if you want to go to this school, we need to have your son's vaccination records from his doctor on file. So they've already mandated, 14 different vaccines? So it's not as if they haven't done that in that environment.
Right. And here's the thing, Dr. K. Calvin, we were never out of school. When 2020, all of our children went back to school. And what Calvin was successful in doing is creating a pretty strong policy in terms of how young people move through the school, parent access. They were very strict about parents, not only children leaving Maryland, but parents leaving Maryland. So they were able to put some things in place that, you know, made us feel comfortable and prevented an outbreak in the campus. So I'm sure that this year, as of right now, that the policies that they put in place for 2020 will follow 2021. We have not been mandated to have our children vaccinated at this point.
Now, what's interesting is that, you know, I'm familiar because, you know, they did the same thing in Gilman, where my sons graduated from. They did an excellent job. But
right.
I also know that last year, Derek, we weren't dealing with the Delta variant. Like, things were not at the level where they are now. And we have behavioral data scientists, we have physicians, we have pediatric specialists who are all expressing an alarm and concern about the Delta variant as it gets transmitted to children because the pediatric ICUs are filling up. Is that in any way impacting your decision? Knowing, as we're watching stories of 4, 5, 6, and 7-year-olds being intubated because they have COVID and their lungs are starting to shut down.
Right. It has to. We have to really consider, because to be totally transparent, I was one who needed to see a little bit more testing done with the vaccine.
Right.
I just know enough to know to proceed, but with caution.
Right.
Right. And, you know, I'm still at that point. I have not crossed over. The danger of the potential incubation of a child is not the driver. It's still the medical safety of the vaccine itself. And then having personal experience with a young man
right.
that I teach and tutor, all right, who plays soccer with my son, and seeing what his family is going through, it gives me a level of hesitancy that is very real, because it's not the the COVID virus that created the problem. It was the vaccine, and that's factual.
For the young person that you know?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and that's not to say that the vaccine and all vaccines are bad. I'm not the one who soapboxed that. All right, what I'm saying is that this child who I have an experience with had an adverse reaction to the vaccine, which is threatening his ability to play sports. He plays 3 sports, and now we know that going into the fall, he will not be able to play the particular sport that he loves. That makes me concerned.
Well, what about this, Derek? And then I'll come back to you, Diema. What about the fact that teachers should be vaccinated? So you're saying that, you know, we can't vaccinate 11 and under. We're not sure. Parents are still, I mean, you're saying you'll have a bit of trepidation, need more information. You've had a personal experience with someone. So should they mandate teachers? Because if not, then you're talking about an environment where you're sending your children back, where you have the Delta variant, which is soon to become the Lambda variant. Like, are you not saying there's got to be some safeguards in place going even above just having a mask?
Yeah, well, again, Dr. K, I try to be honest with myself.
Yeah.
This is the first time that I've ever even really considered taking the vaccine. You know,
mm.
I was one who there are 3 vaccines that are being created from very traditional routes that were happening in Cuba. And we were waiting for the trials because we were going to take a medical trip to Cuba because of just our own level of concern with all the potential possibilities in history. You know, I'm willing to do that. But this Delta virus is very real. It's not a hoax, and it is affecting kids at an alarming rate. So, you know, we're looking at it. You know, we have a little bit more time. I have one son, of course. He is the king of the mask. You know, both of my boys, they do their own research. And they are prepared to take the vaccine. It's actually myself and their mother that are, I guess, the ones who are a little bit more hesitant in terms of moving forward. But as it relates to teaching, which was your original question,
right.
I think that, you know, there's a civil war that is being driven by the media of the unvaccinated and the vaccinated.
Oh, yes.
And the anxiety, I don't know, is worse. I don't know which one is worse, the anxiety of the possibilities or being catching COVID. So, again, I'm out to lunch on that, too. I think that the society, I mean, we just have to, you know, we have to respect time. And we cannot not make the argument that this process is very, very new to us. And we cannot expect people to just run to do something that is new. We should expect them to be responsible. We should expect them to be informed. We should continue to demonstrate you know, our transparency in terms of what our real why is. And we have to give people an opportunity to be comfortable with putting things in their body. And I look at women, all right? When a woman says no, I don't have the right as a man to tell her you must. No, I have to respect that woman. Mm-hmm. And I think that when it comes to health and our bodies and putting things in our bodies, you just can't force us to say yes because you think it's a great idea, because there's a level of science at this point that says that this is a great idea. You have to allow us to be patient with ourselves, the development of this virus, the development of the viruses, the development of the vaccinations, and, you know, having a patient response. I think that right now we are in an impatient response, and I almost feel like it's a used car sale. Right? When somebody, you walk into a dealership at 6 o'clock and somebody's giving you the keys, it makes me cautious. It has nothing to do with the vaccination. I don't like the way you're selling it to me. So I think that what they have to do is they have to reapproach the way that they're presenting the virus to families and communities and employees.
All right. Let's open up the conversation. I have Nasira on the phone. Nasira called in and wants to chime in. Nasira, how are you?
I'm fine, Dr. K. How are you and your guest? Hello, DJ and the other lady.
Yes, Diana. Thank you for calling.
Okay. First of all, I would like to say, please, I don't want to be cut off, but I have a strong feeling as what D. Chase had just said, basically, because I have a child that had an allergic reaction to the DPT shot back in 1984. Mm-hmm. I trusted in the shot 100%. I was 23 at the time. My son got the shot. The man said, your son would be a little lethargic. He would have a little pain. He'll have a fever. You know, if any of this happens, it's normal. So it happened. A friend of mine came to visit me. He put both his fingers in his face, and he was non-responsive. It's like he looked through him. Mm-hmm. I grabbed him, ran him to university. The doctor told me I should never, ever give him any shots medically. We are Muslim, so for my other four children, I was nervous to even put them, take them down the same road. So basically what I did was we did the religious for us and the medical for him. And his first cousin also had a reaction to the DPT shot as well. So for me, I've always had a nervousness about what are in these shots, especially if you are asthmatic or have certain, you know, illnesses. That's number one. And secondly, what I wanted to say is that I look at all ingredients. I don't eat pork. I don't eat beef. So I read my ingredients carefully. I do not think that they should mandate anything because it's a HIPAA law that is your business first. Mm-hmm. It's your prerogative. It's your right. We don't go around saying you better eat some chicken or you better eat some fish. We have to examine and see what we want. Some people don't. Some people like me who eat good and immune system, I'm in the herbs, sea moss, everything. Right. Never been sick like that. I've had pneumonia once, and that's due to my asthma because I was caught out in the snow.
Right.
But other than that, my firm belief, and I'm great ended, is that I think that there should still be a choice. You cannot always force grown folks to. I've never seen it where anything was ever forced prior to this. It was encouraged, the rubella, the, you know, the MMR back in the day, but I've never in my 61 years saw it where it was forced. And my question to you is, Dr. K, and everybody on the panel, what's so important now that everybody has to do it? I know diseases come from before they had scurvy. They found out that was a vitamin C deficiency. From my understanding, we should right now be up on our vitamin D.
Okay.
And a lot of people, a lot of black people aren't on it. But I'm going to close down at that.
Thank you so much, Nasira. I appreciate you. Now, we're going to respond to Nasira. Let me get Kevin in here, Derek and Diana, because we're going to respond to this. And I want to come to Diana first to talk about it. Kevin?
Yeah, how you doing, Dr. Kevin?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, I only got one thing to say. All the people who's against it, don't go to the hospital. Just go ahead. Just don't go to the hospital because you don't want to take the shot. You don't know. You don't think you're a carrier or anything. So if you don't want to take it, don't go to the hospital if you catch it. Because you know what to do before you get there, but you didn't do it. So.
All right. Thank you so much, Kevin. Okay. So, folks, what we're talking about is really building on what D. Chase said, that there is a civil war. I mean, civil war, we put that with quotations, of course, around people who are vaccinated and people who are unvaccinated. People are passionate, whichever side they're on, and they are not willing to give. Daima, the problem is in the middle between those that are vaccinated and those that are unvaccinated are children 12 of age and under. They're in the middle because they don't have a choice because there's nothing for them right now. So what do you think that we should do in terms of should we just be, according to what our last caller said, hey, let's stock up, get your vitamins, don't try to force me. Why is it so important? You know, I've never seen this in my 60 years, except if you go back 100 years, Diana, when we had the Spanish flu with influenza, there was a big push. I mean, there was an aggressive marketing campaign to get children vaccinated when they developed a vaccine. Why? Because unlike COVID-19, with the Spanish flu pandemic, children were dying. So parents were quick to stand in line because they saw children die. Well, today it's older people, and people are not that quick. Why should I give it to my kid when my kid's not going to die? My kid's not 80. I mean, I think it's about who's dying right now, too.
Right. Well, honestly, Dr. K, just to be transparent, you know, I'm just speaking from experience because when all this stuff first started happening and, you know, vaccines and stuff came out, I was totally against the vaccine, like, no, I'm not getting it, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, just dealing with my own health things that came up, I wasn't going to get the vaccine. But then I got hit with COVID, and one of my youngest got hit with COVID. So you're talking me with a health thing going on, and then my youngest, my 10-year-old, we were both hit with COVID at the same time. So that really, 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 really changed my perspective because once you're hit with COVID and you have to eventually go to the hospital, they're going to give you things anyway. So why not be proactive and do what you need to do? So I'm kind of dancing around the question, but
no, but I get what you're saying. As someone who has, now, I have not personally had COVID-19. My family, no, I did not have it. My husband didn't have it. My oldest son had it twice. So when the vaccine was available in Memphis, he ran to get it, D-Chase. He's like, look, I've been down this road. So he was one of the first people, whatever he had to do, volunteer at the hospital. Like, he was doing everything to get the vaccine. And then my youngest son had it. My oldest son, if you follow me on Facebook, he got COVID in the early days because I was tracking what was happening to him online because I remember taking him over to the patient first, trying to find out where to get him tested, trying to find out what to do. And I remember the nurse telling us, we don't know. We're just throwing everything we have at it. And this is the early days of COVID. So, D-Chase, and my last question to you, as your sons are going through the research and they're saying they're ready to do it, are you, as a parent, willing to let them go down that path for your 14-year-old who can get vaccinated now and then your 11-year-old can be vaccinated as of October?
The answer is yes.
Okay.
You know, again, one of the greatest things that I learned from my mother was the power of a child. My mother gave me an enormous amount of power over my own life. Mm-hmm. And so I learned to trust in my decisions, and I learned to live with my decisions.
Yeah.
I have been, you know, great at making sure that my children have been well informed with COVID. They've done a great job in terms of the environments that they've been in. Those individuals have done a great job of making sure that the safety precautions are there. And when I look my son in his eyes, he says, Dad, this just makes a lot of sense to me.
Right.
I said, why? He says, number one, children are dying. Yeah. All right. And number two, that they have been proven, it's proven that those who have taken the vaccines, they fend a little bit better off of in terms of how the virus affects them if they're not vaccinated.
Right.
So he proposed something that is, you know, is unrefutable.
Yeah.
So at that point, I have to say, son, if that's what you want to do, I'll support you in your decision. All right? Now, understand, your dad has a few questions. All right? But I will not stop my son from taking the vaccine. I would not. And neither would I don't believe my wife would.
All right. I thank you so much for just joining us today, Derek Chase, Diana Cook, just joining us to talk about parenting in the age of COVID. Thank you so much to both of you.
No, thank you, Dr. K. Always phenomenal, always on point, asking and talking about these critical issues.
Thank you so much, sir. So, folks, when we come back at 2:30 on the hour, we're going to be here with Dr. James Campbell, a pediatric infectious disease specialist, and we're going to open up the phone lines for you. You got a question? Call the doctor. The doctor will be in, and the doctor will see you in just a moment. today to Dr. K. I'm Dr. KY's Whitehead. Folks, I'm telling you, I can barely keep it together over here in talking about children and COVID. Now, you know, I'm a parent of young people now. I'm not even calling them children. You know, I got a 18-year-old. I got a 20-year-old. I mean, they're growing up. But I've read this op-ed in the Baltimore Sun by Tricia Bishop, who I know, who's been on the show before, and it was entitled, "We Did Everything Right, Our Kids Still Got COVID." And in this piece, she actually says, you know, we don't know what's going to happen because we're watching children across the country, from Florida on up to Maine, from Maryland on out to California, getting intubated because they have COVID. We got to talk about this. We have asked, you know, Dr. James Campbell, who's been with us before, a pediatric infectious disease specialist, to join us and talk through this. And we want to open up the phone lines to you. You have questions. We've got a doctor in the house that will see you. Dr. Campbell, how are you, sir?
I'm well. How are you, Dr. Tech?
So I'm doing well, thank you. The last time we talked, we were talking really about what they call the alpha variant, right? This was when we were starting to hear little whispers about the Delta variant. But now we got the Delta variant. People are talking about the PS1 gamma variant. We've heard a little bit about the Lambda variant. And we're watching pediatric ICUs fill up around the country. Can you talk with us about the Delta variant first as it pertains to children and why so many doctors, pediatric doctors, are concerned about this?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's important for everybody to know that if viruses are circulating, meaning, you know, they're passing person to person, they're going to mutate. It's kind of inherent in the virus that they change every single time that they replicate. And so some of those changes make them weaker. Some of those changes make them stronger. Some of them make them more transmissible. And just by, you know, Darwinian evolution, it's going to be the stronger, more transmissible ones that are going to become more and more dominant as long as there's a lot of virus circulating around. And unfortunately, we still have a lot of virus circulating around, and so we've gotten all of these different variants. Delta is the one we're mainly dealing with now, and it's much more transmissible than the previous variants. In terms of how severe it is, so far the evidence doesn't really show that it's causing more severe illness. But for kids, since they're the most susceptible population, meaning that, you know, under age 12, we just don't have any vaccines available for them. So they're getting higher and higher proportion of all the positives now are kids. That just means that some of them, even though it's the minority, some of them get very, very sick. And like you said, they can wind up in a hospital, they can have to be in an intensive care unit, and some of them intubated and very sick, and some, of course, hundreds of children have died from this. So it's very unfortunate, and we really have to get a handle on this to be able to protect ourselves and our kids.
So with that in mind, as we go through it, and I want to put myself in this seat as if I have young children. I do not. But just, you know, I have my 7-year-old, I have my 9-year-old. I'm thinking about schools this fall. Should I look to homeschool? Because I'm concerned because my children are not vaccinated. And even though I'm vaccinated, my children are wearing masks, but they can easily sit next to someone who comes from an unvaccinated household and could transmit it to my child. Should I really think about homeschooling until it gets under control?
I mean, you know, I think each family has to make decisions for themselves on what is best for them and what their, you know, ability to, quote, tolerate risk is, if you will. But I think the most important thing that we can do is every type of protection possible for our children. And that means the people around them being vaccinated, and that's people that work in their school, including their teachers, but not just the teachers, others that work in the schools, others that help them in after-school programs and that sort of thing, and then family members. And then, of course, masking and hand-washing still will help to reduce that risk. You know, everybody has to realize we can never get risk of anything that has to do with a medical risk down to zero. And so you know, homeschooling or taking or virtual schooling is not necessarily the right answer, especially, you know, there's a lot of families where that's not going to be a possibility. A lot of families can't just say, oh, I'm just going to now stop working, for example. I couldn't do it with my kids. I couldn't just say, oh, I'm going to stop working and be their teacher. And virtual school can be quite difficult as well. And there's some, you know, some benefits to virtual and benefits to homeschooling, but there's also some drawbacks, right? So there's some great things that occur for children by having in-person schooling. And you kind of have to weigh those things. So I think for most families, that's not the right answer, is not just to kind of retreat from society, is to do what you can living in society and protect yourself.
Right, which is a concern. Now, this op-ed, which was in the Baltimore Sun, and the writer says, look, I did everything. I masked. I got vaccinated. I did the pods, and I sent my kid to summer camp, and that was it. In the camp, COVID went through the camp. And even though at this point, you know, her child is moving forward, there's a fear about the long-term impact of COVID on children. I know it may still be too early, but is there any research about what it will do to children, even within a short couple of months with COVID-19?
Yeah, I mean, the good news on that front is that long COVID, as some people call it, or long haul, you know, these like longer-term complications that we're seeing a fair amount of in adults, the studies so far have shown that it's less severe and less common in children. So there are some children who have longer-term medical problems after they've had COVID, but the vast majority, that's not the case. But for some, yeah, they do have things like more prolonged fatigue or some shortness of breath or things like that, but it's the minority. It's fewer than 1 in 20.
Okay.
So, you know, you're talking then about over 90% of kids who get COVID, they recover from it completely in a very short period of time, and then they're fine. So, and, you know, we don't have all the data yet. Those studies are still being done, but the preliminary results so far are showing not a lot of long-term problems to be seen with kids who get COVID. Now, that's not to say they can't get, very, as you said at the beginning, very sick from the original illness. You know, of course they can, and we've cared for kids at our hospital in Baltimore who were very, very sick from this disease.
Okay, so then my other question is, have you been looking in your research and study, and I know this is maybe epidemiologists or virologists who do this work, but have you been looking at the Lambda variant, and do you have any word on what that's going to be?
Yeah, so my main research, actually where I'm standing right now with my mask on in a hallway, is at the Pediatric Center of Frederick, which is a practice about an hour west of Baltimore, and we do vaccine research. So we just vaccinated another 5 children today who are between the ages of 6 and 11 with the Moderna vaccine. So we're doing that both in Baltimore and in Frederick, and we're also testing Novavax vaccine for children. So I don't really do the research you're talking about where you look at the different variants and the epidemiology of those. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, Lambda is the newer version, and there are others as well. And sometimes it's hard to predict when they're first circulating just how much of the you know, the disease burden they will take over, but we'll see over time. At this point, some of the good news is that the vaccines still work quite well for the variants. They don't work as well, but they still protect quite well. And the key thing is especially against severe disease. So, yes, there are more breakthrough infections with the variants, but most of them are mild. They're not putting you in the hospital and many times not even making it where you need to see a doctor. So it's, you know, people get real scared like, oh, it was not even worth it getting the vaccine now because there are breakthroughs. But that shouldn't be the attitude. The attitude is, you know, what you're really trying to prevent primarily is getting real sick, like where you can't work or where you're, you know, you're needing to see a doctor or you have to go to a hospital.
All right, we have a couple of callers who want to get in here, Dr. Campbell. I want to start with Joe. Joe, how are you? You're on with myself and Dr. Campbell.
Yes, my name is Joe, and tell me how you doing, Dr. K.
Doing well. Thank you for calling.
I think a lot of people will change their mind and attitude when they had COVID like I did, because COVID, you know, I got it. I mean, I caught COVID in the hospital, and I lost my kidneys, you know, that I had to have three heart operations, but I don't think the heart operation came from COVID. But I know COVID made my sugar go high, and I had to go back in the hospital twice. But, you know, I think that if you have COVID, I think your attitude would change towards your kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's all that I got to say.
So this is Dr. Campbell. Thank you for that. I think it's really important that people like you who were patients who suffered through the disease, you know, it's important that you, like you are right now on the show, letting people know that this is not just the common cold, right? This can lead you to lose your kidneys. This can lead you to be intubated. This can be some serious stuff. So, you know, I really appreciate you, you know, being brave enough to come on the show and let people know how important it is to protect. Because,
you know, I had the
good people are getting sick of having the, for a year and a half, of having to do all these precautions and be careful or whatever, but it's worth it if you can, you know, prevent having to go through what you went through.
Thank you so much, Jim.
But,
go ahead, sir. You have one more comment? Okay, thank you, Joe. So Dr. Campbell, just to go back, and I definitely appreciate Joe coming on to the show. One of the things that people are still concerned about is that, okay, I've been vaccinated. I can still get COVID-19 with the Delta variant. If I'm starting to have any symptoms at all, would you recommend that people automatically just go get COVID tested just so they can be sure that that's not what they have, but I'm not sure. If I find out I have it, what exactly can be done if I've been vaccinated?
Yeah, so that's a question that comes up a lot, and it is very difficult to distinguish COVID clinically just by looking or what your symptoms are to distinguish COVID from other similar diseases. So like flu or a cold or sometimes even things like allergies.
Right.
So, yeah, I do think it is important that people get tested, and there's two main things that it helps with. One is if you know that you have COVID, even if you're not feeling very sick, you're going to be real careful and understand that if you start feeling a little bit sicker, that you're going to seek care right away, because the earlier you get care, if you're getting worse, the better you're going to do. So, you know, if you know it's COVID versus just the common cold, that'll help you to know that you need to get medical care sooner. And then the other reason to know is for people around you. You know, if you know that you have COVID and, you know, you have someone in your household who maybe could get really sick from it, or you have children in your household, or, you know, anybody else that you want to protect them from getting it, then, you know, I think that's another reason, because that will help you to know how to protect them, and that is to isolate yourself, to make sure that you're wearing a mask all the time, washing your hands well, you know, all the things that we would do to keep from being able to spread it to other people.
Okay, so in wrapping up, Dr. Campbell, I'm so glad. Folks, if you have a call, you should go ahead and get on the phone right now, 410-319-8888, if you have a question for Dr. James Campbell. It seems like this, it's the same message, but unfortunately, it's become politicized. But from the beginning, it's been, hey, first, stay in the house, wash your hands. If you're going to go out, wear a mask, stay away from people. I did that. Then we got a vaccine. Get the vaccine. I did that. Now we are watching, as one of my earlier guests said, it's I feel like a civil war between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated, because it's like, you know, whatever side you're on, you're extremely passionate and committed to your side. If you believe that, you know, COVID-19 is a result of 5G, it doesn't matter what, how much money I give you. It doesn't matter how much I try to convince you, you are not taking the vaccine. It's just you have drawn your line in the sand. Because I don't know if it's because of their earlier messaging, but it seems like this is not something that's going to be over just because we're giving people $100 to go get it.
Yeah. I mean, it's so unfortunate, Dr. K, and everyone who's listening, that anybody would want to twist this into something that's political. I mean, it has nothing to do with politics. You know, heart attacks and diabetes don't have anything to do with politics. Neither does COVID, and neither do COVID vaccines. Right. So trying to turn it into a political or, you know, however else you want to think about it, other than a public health intervention, we should just, you know, I don't know the right way to try to convince people, but I think it's through things like this, like on this show, just talking it through, hearing what everybody's concerns are, individual talking about it, I think really helps. But, you know, we work in public health. We're here just to, I'm doing the studies to try to get the vaccine so we can get them into kids. We're putting out the message to say what we know about the vaccines. I don't have any political, you know, reasons for wanting to convince people to vaccinate, to get vaccinated. It's just, I want to be protected. I want my family to be protected. I want all people in my community to be protected. And I know it's the best way. And, you know, I don't know how else we can explain it other than providing the information to people and say, you know, this isn't politics. This is public health.
Well, we have a couple of callers on the line that I wanted to get through. We have Zach on the phone. Zach's daughter got sick and she's in shock trauma. Can you talk a bit about that, Zach?
Yes, I'm just kind of want to give you a little update because I called you a while back. And I'm going to make this as quick as possible because I'm at work right now and I have no business on this phone. But listen, my daughter had a kidney transplant not too long. I told you guys about that, okay? Now, in this vaccine, there's a something in there that she can't take it because it will affect her. Now, her doctor told her a while back when this vaccine first came out last August that he wanted to talk to her. He said, come in and talk to me. He said, listen, there's people that got 90% of the people got very, very sick. And they some of them may even die. He said, but some of them didn't get sick. He said, I can't tell you which way to go. He said, you have to make that decision yourself, either to take it or not. She looked into it. She saw that there was something in it. So she didn't take it. But anyway, 10 days ago, my daughter called me at 6 in the morning and said, come get me, please, hurry. My temperature will not go down. It's 109, and my stomach is bothering me so bad. So I rushed her down to shock trauma because that's who did the kidney transplant. I wanted her to be there because if there was something wrong with the kidney, I wanted her to be there. But we pull in, I pull up, I take her in the shock to the emergency room. I tell them, I'm going to park my truck. I come back. They said, you can't come in now because these symptoms are so close to COVID. So I left. I went home. I waited for them to call. They called me 5 hours later to tell me that they still couldn't find out what was wrong. Then about 2 hours later, they called back and said they found out what was wrong. It was some sort of blood disease or something. They had to split her open inside, okay, and go in and try to fix this. I mean, now I got her son, which is 14. He will be 15 in 2 more weeks. He's got to go back to school. So now they're forcing us to get the vaccine for him.
Okay.
And it's so confusing. This is so confusing because you don't know which way to go. You don't know whether to take it or not to take it. I don't understand. I mean, I don't want to discourage anyone from doing it, but that's more or less the update.
Okay, thank you so much, Zach. I appreciate that. So Dr. Campbell, before I go to the next caller, Matt, it seems like there's a lot of confusion here with Zach, particularly around now you're saying that they've kind of forced the family to get vaccinated to protect the child. Can you just talk a little bit about why having people in the household, if you do have someone who has a compromised immune system, that it may be a benefit and the way to protect them?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly, Dr. K, is that if there's people in your household who have diseases where they might get even sicker from COVID, then protecting everyone else in the household can give an indirect type of protection to whoever that compromised person is, or a person whose immune system is having troubles, or like if they've had a transplant before, then they may be on medications that could make them sicker if they got COVID. So, you know, we call it, in pediatrics, we call it cocooning, because it's like putting a cocoon around a baby, for example, if you have everybody else vaccinated. So, you know, of course, all medical decisions are individual. You know, every individual has the right to make their own medical decisions. And but I think the most important thing is it's so hard to make a decision if you don't have good information. So I would just encourage that everybody tries to get the best information that they can and not to go on, you know, what people are saying on social media or by hearsay or whatever. You know, it's medical professionals that will, you know, if there's a complicated issue about transplant or about a child or whatever, I think that's where you need to come to the trusted people and ask them all the, you know, all the right questions, because that's where, you know, like I wouldn't, nobody's going to come to me to get their car fixed because I don't know how to fix cars.
Right.
So
that makes sense.
Don't trust your mechanic with medical problems and don't trust your doctor with mechanical problems. So, but I think that's the best advice I can give is ask the right people and they should be able to give you the answer.
Now, I know you have to go, Dr. Campbell. I think if we can get one more phone call in here. Matt, we only have a few seconds with Dr. Campbell. If you can make your story quick, we definitely want to be able to answer your question, sir.
Yes. Thank you. Can you hear me there?
We can.
Yes. My family and I, we actually had COVID in the spring. It wasn't a whole lot of fun, but it, you know, not the end of the world. We are looking for information or studies that have been done to find out, you know, any negative or positive reactions to people getting the vaccine after they have been exposed to COVID. You know, we've heard this and that, and some people have had negative reactions, and, you know, of course, I, you know, I'm going to err on this, the natural immunity from getting the virus itself. But I just wanted to know your thoughts on the, you know, whether or not it's a good idea, how effective it's going to be for us to get the vaccine after we have already been exposed and fought off COVID.
Okay, thank you so much, Matt. I'll have your question answered off the line. Dr. Campbell, so for people who've had COVID, yes, let me give that to you, sir.
Yeah, that's a common question and a really good one. We do know that you get antibodies, you know, like protective proteins in your blood from both getting the infection and from getting the vaccine. And we also know that in many of the studies that we've done and others have done that some of the people who joined the studies had already been infected prior to joining the study. So we do have a fair amount of data on getting vaccine after having already been infected. And what it looks like happens is if you get the vaccine after having infection is you get like a boost. In other words, you had the natural immunity with those antibodies. You get the vaccine, it boosts them up even higher. Do you need that extra boost? You know, we can't say that for sure, but it certainly looks like having extra antibody there is going to give you extra protection.
Okay.
And the safety profile was the same. So, you know, there's no additional safety concerns if you get the vaccine after having gotten the disease. You know, like flu shot we give every year to people, and it, even if you've had flu before, you just get a boost. And lots of our vaccines are like that. So we are recommending that it doesn't, you know, like to disregard whether or not you previously had COVID and to get the vaccine.
Okay, that's good.
You know,
So even if you've had COVID, get the vaccine. Like, that is
even if you've had COVID, you're going to get extra protection if you get vaccinated. Yeah.
And let's go to Kevin. Kevin will be our last caller. Kevin, how are you?
How you doing? Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
I just had a quick comment. I just turned 35. You know, I'm a fairly healthy individual. I take care of myself. I've never been vaccinated, and I don't plan on getting it. I find it strange that I think we should be focusing on factual things instead of how we feel about stuff. It's a fact that the United States spent a lot of years poisoning its own people, including blacks and whites alike. They did a lot of things that wasn't right. So when people have a fear of getting vaccinated, there are actual reasons as to why they don't want to get it. And I think instead of pointing a finger at them or saying just period that they should be vaccinated, address the reasons why they don't want to get vaccinated in the first place.
Okay. Thank you so much, Kevin. I appreciate you. So, Dr. Campbell, to Kevin's point, Do you feel that we in terms of really the medical community, not we, but you, have done all you can to give people the information that they need? So at this point, I mean, how much more do we need to tell people around getting vaccinated? I'm just asking.
It's a good question. We try our best. I mean, there is a lot more information out there on COVID vaccine than you've probably seen with any other vaccine, right? So people are getting vaccinated all the time, and they, you know, don't have as much access to all of the information that we have for COVID vaccines on the CDC website, on the Maryland Department of Health website, on our website, on in your doctor's office, in the newspaper, everywhere. So I think, you know, the amount of info that's out there is great, but not everybody, one, believes in the information, and, you know, like your last caller saying, you know, people feel like they're being kind of coerced or forced or pushed. You know, the way I look at it from our point of view, from the medical and public health side, is I don't feel like I'm trying to coerce or force or necessarily push, but trying to say my job is to get as accurate information out there so that people can make their own choices, but based on accurate information. Where right. If you're taking inaccurate information, for example, like saying that what your last caller said, that he feels like people have been poisoned in the past. I think, you know, that's a pejorative term that, you know, people have used to try to scare people.
Right.
But we're not poisoning people. You know, we test these very carefully, and there's no poisons in them. They're used to protect people. I think a statistic that people should keep in their heads right now is that 97.5% of the people who are now hospitalized for COVID are unvaccinated.
97.5%.
And over 99% of the people who recently have died from COVID were unvaccinated.
Oh, wow.
So it's the unvaccinated that are winding up in the hospital and are winding up dying from it, unfortunately. So yes, vaccines aren't perfect, but they provide a great protection against COVID. And I think people who in the past were worried they were being pushed.
We gotta stop you there. Dr. Campbell, I'm so sorry. I have to stop it there. Dr. Campbell is a professor in the Department of Pediatrics in the Division of Infectious Diseases. We have to stop it. We appreciate your time, sir. We look forward to talking with you next month.
All right. Thank you.
Folks, keep it here. We'll be back right after the break.